Mike and I were having a conversation earlier this week, and we really like our theme song, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Chris Coleman did a great job.
I think so, yeah. It's good branding for the show, I think. But I think we need some variations on a theme, don't you, Becky?
I think so. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, and we're trying to figure out how to get that done, so we thought we might ask you. If you're a musician and you like our theme song and you'd like to participate in Ask an Atheist in a musical way, we are now accepting submissions for basically variations on our Ask an Atheist theme to bring a little bit more texture to the show.
Oh, absolutely. I think cover, don't be limited to just doing an exact copy.
No, absolutely not, yeah.
Put your own stamp of creativity on it. Do something fun with it. Do it in a different style. Do it in a different genre.
I would like to see one with an accordion, maybe with a sitar. I don't know. How about you?
Ask an Atheist death metal?
Yes. Oh, well, of course.
Yeah. Maybe something like K-pop?
I'm going for a sweeping Rachmaninoff piano.
I think we might be dreaming a little big there. I don't. Actually, I have no idea. Maybe polka. How about polka?
Polka would be fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of options. I'd like to see something with a theremin.
Yeah.
A comb.
Actually, I have a...
Bagpipe.
I have a request in my will. For when I do die, that the band that plays, like, as I'm shot in, out of space, or, you know...
So you're going to have, like, a Hunter S. Thompson funeral?
Not really. I wanted more of a, you know, launched into space type stuff.
Like Scotty?
Like Scotty. Like Scotty and the other guy, the guy who wrote Star Trek, whose name is...
Gene Roddenberry.
Yes, Gene Roddenberry.
They were launched into space?
Also shot into space, yeah.
That's a very Star Trek 3 kind of death. Did they shoot him out of a torpedo, or did they just sprinkle him out of the space station?
I think it was a sprinkling. If I could be torpedoed... If I could torpedo a spaceship when I... I don't know. But the idea, what I was originally going to say is I want a band with, I believe it was bagpipes, an accordion, and a theremin, I believe was my request.
I'm going to, because I'll still be around overseeing this funeral, I think.
Yeah, I think the assumption, that's a pretty fair assumption.
I think I'm going to throw in a harmonica and a banjo.
There you go.
Somebody has to play the spoons and maybe a washboard.
Hey, washboards are awesome.
I'm just saying that these things together may not work harmoniously, but you don't have to listen to it.
No,
so.
One, I don't have to listen to it, and two, I think you might be surprised. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Give us a call if you got one in ya. We'd also like to thank some people today. Ask an Atheist, as you know, is a show supported by advertising, by events, and by donations from the community. And I won't lie to you, things are a little tight right now, right, Mike?
Yes, very tight.
Yeah.
You like open the wallet and a moth flies out sort of sense.
Yeah, I know you can't see me, but I am wearing a barrel right now.
I'm wearing a cardboard belt!
But we'd like to thank Sean from Ontario, Ronnie from Denmark, and Scott from Langley, British Columbia. Very odd, something Becky pointed out.
All of our contributors this month are from abroad, and we have a listenership that's international as well as local and US-based, so we thank all of you for listening.
Yeah, so if you've got some, you know, if you got some coins you'd like to throw our way, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the shiny yellow button rather than the shiny red button, and you'll be taken to PayPal. Or if you've got a product or a business that you would like to advertise with us, we would really appreciate it. We know that advertising on Ask an Atheist has worked for a lot of people. So.
Yeah, this isn't just a charity thing that you're giving us an ad because you support us. This stuff actually works. We've had some real successes. A house got sold.
Yeah.
There are three continents involved in this sale.
Yeah, and so the thing is, when you advertise with Ask an Atheist, you definitely reach, you know, Tacoma on KLAY 1180, the station that we're on, but we also have the podcast, which clearly, from our Peggy's Challenge supporters, has an international reach, so we could really use your support. And finally, we're going to be doing something really fun this Wednesday. Our next episode of Ask an Atheist, like we did last March, is going to be recorded live in front of an audience. Ask an Atheist, we will record an episode this Wednesday, January 30th at 4 p.m. The event is in coordination with the TCC Science and Inquiry Club, a really fun bunch of people. There's no charge for attendance, and there's a possibility of extra credit for TCC students if you attend. It's 4 p.m., no cover charge. It's at the theater in Building 2 at Tacoma Community College on, I think, 19th Street here in Tacoma?
Yeah, 19th and Mildred.
Yeah, if you live in Tacoma, chances are you know where TCC is without being told, and if you don't, well, you know, there's Google.
At the end of the number one bus line?
Yeah, at the end of the number one bus line. I'm not a busing kind of guy. Actually, I'm more right now a walking kind of guy. So we've got some, there's a person that we've been talking about a lot here on Ask an Atheist. It's a story that we've been following very closely. Albert Saber is a man who was arrested in Egypt for doing, as Mike likes to say, what we do every day on the show. He was just talking about what he believes.
Yeah, he has an Egyptian atheist Facebook page. A neighbor spotted it, reported him to the police. He had a mob, angry mob outside of his building calling for his death. He had been recently charged 3 years for blasphemy and insulting people's religious beliefs.
Yeah. And the thing is, yeah, so the police show up when there's a mob, and you think they're there to protect people against the mob? No. They arrest the guy for a charge of contempt of religion. Which I would be in big trouble, I guess. But so he was initially sentenced to 3 years in prison in December, and he appealed and was released for the first time in 4 months. The Daily News Egypt has reported that Saber had left Egypt on January 26th, and the day of his appeal decision. Saber is quoted as saying, "I did not want to leave. If it were up to me, I would stay and defend myself, even if I were to be executed. But many people were suffering because of me and had already suffered enough. There was nothing I could do but listen to those around me who have suffered because of me and my cause." He reportedly left the country without returning home at the urging of a high-rank official. So it looks like he's got some help from within the government to get out.
Yeah, I can imagine there's not every aspect of the government is under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood,
yeah,
which is going to be pushing these laws in a much more aggressive fashion than Mubarak's regime did. Because there always was a sort of flavoring of Islam in the country, but now we're going in a much more theocratic direction.
One of the things that was really interesting that he said is that, you know, he left the country without returning home at the urging of this high-ranking official, and Saber was really specific in saying that this guy was not threatening me, but saying, "We really want you to do this because we really can't guarantee your safety as much as we would like to." This is reported, of course, via Daily News Egypt, which is an independent English-language newspaper in Egypt.
Yeah.
And it's quite incredible. I mean, this is the first time that he's saying, "I don't deny what I said. I don't deny that I'm an atheist. I don't deny my criticism of, you know, this religious strangle on the citizens of Egypt." He acknowledges that his lawyer's approach was to say, "No, he actually didn't say this stuff, so he shouldn't be guilty."
Yeah.
He acknowledges that was his lawyer strategy in doing this.
And this is something that, you know, we've talked about it on the show, the blasphemy talk that I did in Olympia, and then most recently up in Seattle. We've been focusing, you know, I spend a lot of time talking about Albert Saber, about Sinala Damaruku, about Adam Darski. You know, these are things which are important that we need to update you on. I'd like to say that we were sharp on this, but we actually got this story through a listener of the show, Sean in Montreal. Thank you very much for the update. So there's a website that most of us go to. I don't think it's any secret that here on Ask an Atheist we're science fiction fans. Would you say?
Oh, I'd say easily. Yes,
we've spent a fair amount of time talking about. I mean, it was even a question about the Star Wars prequels on our political thing.
Yeah, we're definitely fans of science fiction, fantasy, all sorts of things. We are fans.
Yeah. So in November, IO9 author Charlie Jane Anders unleashed a piece explaining that if only atheists were to read more science fiction, we'd stop being smug. We'd be humbled by a sense of wonder, and we'd promptly grow respect for differing viewpoints. In a self-reflective piece titled "What I've Learned After 5 Years of Arguing on the Internet," she apologized. "I've definitely written things I regretted afterwards. Like that piece about atheism and science fiction a while back, there was a case where I hadn't fully thought through what I was trying to say, and I wrote something kind of, you know, halfway, that hurt people who already felt marginalized and under assault from mainstream culture. And in retrospect, a lot of what I had been reading as smugness from a few of my fellow non-believers was probably more like anger at that marginalization. And I'm sorry about that." So, I like the fact that she's apologizing, and she identified as a non-believer, which I hadn't known before.
Yeah, I find it kind of interesting that she thought that we needed to read more science fiction.
Yeah.
When, in my experience with the atheist, non-theist, humanist, whatever you want to call it, community, that's not a problem.
Is that even possible? I mean,
no.
There are certainly atheists or people that do not subscribe to a religion that are not science fiction fans. But generally, I would say that in an active atheistic involved community, it's kind of pervasive.
Okay, you've said you imagine that there are atheists who don't like science fiction. Have you met one?
Scott was never a big fan. He doesn't really know what we're talking about. Scott Leopold, who's a friend of the show,
yeah,
really doesn't know what the hell we're talking about when we talk about science fiction. He'll politely nod, yeah, but he won't really. So there are people that aren't really big, okay, fans of this stuff. But he's a minority.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I used to say it. I'm not unknown for my opinions on Star Trek amongst our friends. And at an atheist meetup, when people start talking about Star Trek, and I let my opinions be known, that temperature in the room drops 20 degrees. But this is something that we were going to talk about on the show. This is something that we were going to we were considering discussing. Other things took precedence. But I think we should talk about it a little bit. What really got me here is that if we read science fiction, that we are not humbled by a sense of wonder, that the concept that atheists don't have a sense of wonder is something that I've honestly just failed to understand.
Yeah, that's never been a problem. The problem is when somebody gives you an idea that doesn't inspire a sense of wonder, but in fact a sense of contempt at how small the idea is.
Yeah.
I have no problem reading fiction, for instance, that has supernatural elements. I love it. I have no problem with reading things that involve things that I know are not real. I can read a regular non-genre fiction book, like I can read To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right.
Atticus Finch is no more real than Harry Potter.
Right.
I'm putting myself into a world that doesn't exist and suspending my suspension of disbelief, and, you know, I'm looking at something that isn't real and feeling that stuff. I have no problem reading things that have things I don't believe. The problem comes in is when somebody tries to say that this stuff is real in our world. That's the stuff that I react to. And somebody who comes to me saying that, you know, marijuana cures cancer, or that homeopathy is real, or that they're not going to, you know, vaccinate their kids because there's cancer in it. That stuff in the real world, I'm going to reject, and I'm not going to respect those beliefs.
I want to go one step further and talk in sort of the milieu that that Charlie Jane Anders here is trying to discuss. Is I think actually, the science fiction, my lack of belief in religion, my lack of belief in gods and stuff like that, I think actually enhances my sense of wonder at the universe. I mean, honestly, the way I look at it is I want to be ready for what the universe throws at me. It's obvious from the universe is enormous. We don't know what's out there, most of it, in detail. I mean, we have a very good idea of its major structure, how it was put together. We figured all those things out. But is there other life out there? Stuff like that. We don't know. And I want to be free of preconceptions as much as possible. And all my preconceptions, I want to be based in the evidence of what I have in front of me. I don't want to look at this enormous, wonderful universe and then assumed that it's stage managed by a guy with a beard who has a zombie kid. I don't want to, when we start trying to make the universe make sense in the small and through these Bronze Age myths, it seems like it takes a lot of grandeur out of space and out of technology and out of science and out of all of the things that science fiction really speaks to people about.
And I think that this kind of discussion is exactly the hearing these kinds of viewpoints is exactly what can change someone's mind about whether an atheist is smug or not. The author says that, you know, she has written many times and commenters wound up convincing her that she was completely off base,
yeah,
and that she was still glad that she wrote these things because the discussion is 100% worth it. When we hear these kinds of viewpoints and say, look, this isn't necessarily smugness, or it might be being read as smugness, but it's actually anger at being marginalized, or you actually gain a sense of wonder because of this, you can, you know, enhance sort of the perspective and viewpoints of everyone.
There is a problem here, which I'm kind of glad that we're talking about the apology, and I'm glad that she apologized. I mean, that's really credit where credit's due there. But the problem here is that when somebody says something, people don't like, says something challenging, that gets wide distribution, and even when it's wrong. But the corrections, when they come, they don't get distributed as widely.
Oh, that's nothing new. I mean, how many times have we seen a Scientist magazine have a question in big print on the front saying, is Darwin wrong? And then the article says no. More people see that cover than ever read the article. And this is nothing new at all. The part that I find sort of interesting is, yes, science fiction is about asking those broad questions and speculating about the answers, where religion, especially the religions that we have on hand, have such a small view of the universe and a small view of what those answers actually are. They, in fact, cauterize those questions rather than open them up and really explore them the way that science fiction does. That's why you have a universe that's ancient and broad. And when you look at religious fundamentalists, they have a universe that's tiny and simple, and it just cuts off any new questions because we already know all the answers. We don't know, you know, nothing is smaller than this. Nothing is bigger than this. the people who wrote these books didn't even conceive that other planets existed. They never conceived that we were anything other than the whole of the universe ourselves.
Yeah.
There's just such a small view of the universe. Why stop yourself with asking questions there? Science fiction, in many ways, is the opposite of that viewpoint.
And I read science fiction well before I started reading religious books, to be honest with you. And one of my earliest concerns, one of my childhood concerns from religion, was if religion is true, how come all of these religious books don't encounter or don't encompass the universe as we've observed it? I mean, it's a really simple question, and when I would ask those questions in religious contexts, I would get the usual throwaway, you know, the apologetics answers, which, I mean, you're used to getting a lot, right?
The wonder of creation cannot be understood by man, et cetera, things like that.
Yeah, so the wonder of creation cannot be understood by man. However, we're figuring out how it works with some difficulty, but it's definitely within our comprehension.
So why not put that stuff that we don't understand yet in the holy books in the Iron Age, and we are like, I have no idea what this means, and suddenly it makes sense as we explore more of the universe.
Right.
That would be the keystones of a book that's actually true, rather than one that's basing itself limited by the knowledge of somebody who wrote it in the Iron Age.
That was what intelligent design was attempting to do, was try to, you know, is to say that everything we've seen in biology totally backs up Genesis, even though it totally doesn't.
At the very least, the Bible would say, wash your hands before you prepare food. It doesn't even do that.
Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. In a moment, we'll be talking about Bibles in schools and, I think, the proper response to them.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
And how do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Joining us now is David Williamson. He's the director of Central Florida Freethought Community, an organization dedicated to secular activism and state-church separation efforts. CFL Freethought is a chapter of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Most recently, the organization is responding to World Changers of Florida, an evangelical group being granted permission to distribute Bibles to students on campus during school hours for Religious Freedom Day on January 16th. Welcome, David. How you doing?
I'm very well, thanks.
So, what give us a background on this story here. Apparently, there's this World Changers of Florida group, and there was some sort of arbitration that they then taken to other schools.
Sure. Down in the Naples area, Southwest Florida, the Liberty Council, which is the legal arm of the Liberty University, and it's a Christian ministry basically that pays lawyers to go out and look for stuff to do. They held a consent decree with Collier County. For a few years, they had distributed Bibles. I'm not sure whether it was passive or active distribution, but they distributed Bibles in Collier County schools, which is Naples. And apparently the superintendent either was new or just got tired of it and said, no, can't do it anymore. And Liberty Council was called. And, of course, their free lawyers came in and took $20,000 from the school board and got a consent decree saying that they were engaging in viewpoint discrimination, which is deciding a group cannot distribute based on what they have to say as opposed to who they are.
And a consent decree, that isn't a ruling, that's like a document that is signed off on with the approval of a judge, but not an in-court ruling, am I correct?
Right. I don't think it counts as precedent, but I think it was waved around as a threat to Orange County. That's just my speculation from what I've heard. They know people in Orange County. I think the president of the World Changers is from Orange County, which is the central Florida area in Orlando, and they probably knew a bunch of church volunteers who could do it up here and decided to come on up here and do it, and we've got to respond, or I think we're going to have an epidemic.
So you mentioned passively distributing Bibles. What do you mean by passively?
Sure. Passive distribution is any type of non-school materials distributed when they are simply placed somewhere on the campus for students to pick up without speaking to the students or acting in a way that encourages or discourages them, as opposed to the infamous Gideon's Bible distribution method where they tell everyone to come to the front of the class and take their Bibles in a single file line.
So they're just leaving them in a place where kids can see them, but not actually being there when they pick them up?
Right. The consent decree, which we've got posted on our Facebook page, it explains the rules for the distribution. And, they set up a table and put the Bibles on, leave the Bibles there, replenish them if they need to, and come back and get the table and the materials later if there are any left.
So where are they placing these Bibles exactly?
I don't know. I don't have a map of each school and where they went, but the folks that we know in the schools that monitored the effort, students in the Secular Student Alliance chapters, we have three that were affected by this. They took pictures when they were allowed and reported back on that, and I think they were in the lunchroom or the kids' gathering areas outside during those non-instructional times as part of the requirement.
So when did you guys first hear about the Bible distribution that they were doing?
I wish we could have found out sooner, and we may have been able to prevent it, but it was Monday night on local TV news, which was only 36 hours before it was supposed to happen on Religious Freedom Day, which is a week and a half ago. We started a program last year where our members monitor school board and county commission and city council meetings for violations of the rules on invocations, and some of us watch the entire meetings on video, online, or DVR, but most of the time we just document the events surrounding the invocation, and unfortunately this one just didn't come up at a school board meeting since the attorney seems to think that their policy is not affected by this. They think they're working within their policy and don't need to change it, so we just didn't see it coming.
Well, you've done a really good job with a 36-hour turnaround time. You've managed to gather a lot of media attention and get books together and get a program going. What has the media attention been like? What's your perception of it been?
Well, I've not been involved in something like this. This is my first rodeo, so to speak. I think that we knew that the weapons we could use were the words secular humanism, and unfortunately that gets everybody excited, and certainly the press. And the press, I did several interviews the first day that this came out. We just did a press release with the help of FFRF. American Atheists did one as well, tangentially to ours, and they were all excited about atheists coming into the schools, which I think they expected to get everybody all excited. And I didn't mention the word atheist once in any of the interviews that I did, but I think it was 10 times on average in every reporter's story.
So you did decide to respond by distributing your own literature. Everyone got excited, you say. What kind of responses did you get from school officials? Were they warm? Were they cordial? Were they, yes, you are completely allowed?
Yeah. The response has been positive so far. Andrew Seidel, our attorney for FFRF, he was in direct contact with the school board almost immediately after we let him know what was going on. They got the verbal or email okay to be able to distribute our materials. We were kind of hoping that there would be some objection so that it would make the point that we don't want to have any groups in the school if they can't have an equal playing field, but they've agreed to have our materials distributed as long as we comply with their standards which were kind of funny to read, on violence, alcohol, drugs, and obscenity. But so we figure if the Bible made it in, then their standards can't be pretty rigid.
So what books and literature and pamphlets will you be distributing?
The national organizations have stepped right up, and it seems we've herded all the cats into the same team, which has been amazing to experience locally on the ground. The FFRF, of course, is sending down their famous non-tracts, which I understand are like chick tracts, which you've mentioned on the show before.
Yeah.
American Atheists were eager to jump on board, and we don't have a chapter of American Atheists in the Orlando area, so we were glad to distribute books for them. They sent Part 3 of The Age of Reason by Thomas Paine, Why I'm Not a Muslim by Ibn Warraq, Jesus is Dead, we're hoping that one will raise some eyebrows, by Bob Price, and What on Earth is an Atheist, Madeline Murray O'Hare, and then the AHA, the American Humanist and the Secular Student Alliance, are sending brochures on atheism, humanism, and information about their organizations. We even had the Skeptic's Annotated Bible offer to help, but they won't be the next run won't be printed in time.
Oh, that's too bad.
So the schools have been professional about this. They've allowed you, they've given you the same equal time as the Constitution requires. But that's not the countdown that we immediately start in our heads whenever we find the equal time starting to be implemented. We're waiting for the angry parent, the screaming person in the local newspaper or blogger. Have you found that screaming angry parent yet, or has it been so far so calm?
No, we have not heard much in our direction. We hope that people have contacted the school board. And I was prepared to, you know, respond to emails and phone calls, and I've got one email from somebody that pretty much was just ignorant of our cause, and another letter came to me. We actually posted it on the Facebook page. One gentleman wrote, and it was one of those letters where he says, "I have a point, and here I'm going to make it." And by the time you get done reading, you think he has no point, no vocabulary, and honestly doesn't. Makes you feel stronger and much more into what you're doing as far as, you know, keeping the atheist responsibility movement out there.
I believe we've read that one. I think it did that one get posted?
Yeah, that one was posted because he didn't have any identifying information on there other than his name, and it was a pretty basic name.
Yeah.
He posted that one on the wall.
I think that may end up in the show notes because it starts off strong, ends really weakly, and makes me feel ashamed to be a part of the IT industry. I think I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
So overall, I know that I mean, we all understand why it's necessary to put this literature in the schools and why it's necessary to you know, be able to show both sides of the argument and how important this is to the concept of a secular state and secular education. However, your overall goal is not to provide just an alternative to Christianity. You have a slightly I think a better overall goal in just stopping this process entirely, correct?
Right. Initially, we did not want to spend our time and our efforts going into schools and trying to recruit young souls from the religious. We think it needs to be something that's left in people's homes, in their churches, and involving the resources of the school. You know, whether that be in background checks, which we're all required to do, administrators communicating on how this is going to go down. They're providing tables for us. We're not even bringing our own tables. So the effort involved, in addition to the concerns of having additional students on campus right now and money being spent in the public school system, which is the last thing we want to do, is waste money that we desperately need for education on these types of things, is bad policy. So we think that, along with Andrew Seidel from FFRF, that there's a way to do this that can exclude all groups from coming on campus if you do it objectively and simply in a way that will not have a viewpoint discrimination, called against you.
So I understand that that's your overall goal, but in the media, the school board has said that this is something that people are allowed to do and they'll continue doing it. And this was something you originally didn't want to do. Do you feel like your organization is prepared to do this for the long haul as long as people continue to try to distribute Bibles in schools?
I think we can. We are the newest of the many groups in the Orlando area that are free thought groups. We're focused on church and state, whereas others are focused on social or educational events, community type, you know, things. So we think that this is something we have to do. We really can't let this go. I suspect, as I mentioned to some people in the press, I said that we're going to have a religious fair once a year on Religious Freedom Day if we don't stop this. And we need book fairs. We don't need religious fairs. But I suspect that the school board will tell us, no, we're going to do this. And one day a year, we'll all go in. And my goal is to make sure that there is, in addition to all the churches, that there's a table for FFRF, American Atheists, American Humanists, all the skeptics groups, anybody and everybody in this, you know, organization, locally, nationally, and by the state, is going to have a table at that event. So pretty soon they're going to get tired of us, kind of like they did in Santa Monica with the nativity displays.
That's a pretty good idea. Is there a way that the, if you could get help from the sort of the nationwide community, where exactly could you guys use assistance right now?
I think that we're narrowed down into the last probably week or so before we get into the schools. We're waiting on some efforts from the attorneys to help us out. But I think what we really need is, at this point, to spread the word that a response is appropriate. It is necessary, and it is possible. And I think that the spirit of the movement needs to be emboldened by our efforts so that people know what to do, know to contact us if they have questions about how to do it, and we can, you know, suppress this a little bit, because we don't want people to think that they've had a victory here. We want them to regret having tried to do this.
So one thing really, really struck me on this, David, which was that Daniel Koster, who's the president of the local high school secular club, reported that these guys weren't quite as passive as the rules may allow them to be, and said that the representatives from the local Christian group were actually standing at the distribution tables and talking to students, not just the passive distribution, but actively evangelizing to these kids in public schools. Does your group or FFRF have any plans to bring suit?
Yeah, Daniel's great. He started the Wakaiba Atheist and Secular Alliance last school year. He's one of our first members, and we're glad to have him. We had the clubs at the schools, as I said, keep an eye on what happened there. And the school board seems to be taking this potential violation of the rules pretty seriously and is following up, and even with disciplinary action if it's necessary and justified. We understand from Daniel, though, that adult was likely a parent of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Club, and we think that they conflated in their own mind and in the students' mind the passive distribution as well as the club's regular efforts. And we've asked and inquired about that and how we can use our Secular Student Alliance clubs. We've got five, by the way, just in high schools in the Orlando area,
yeah.
How we can use those folks to do this, and they've made it clear that they don't want to do that, and they don't want to confuse the kids on who this is, who's doing this, and we've agreed to that, and we're going to help provide information so that they can follow up and let world changers and the school know that they've messed up by having the parents there.
Mike and I have talked about this before, and you were telling me that that when it comes to stuff like this, in the religious communities, there's a sort of a blatant disregard for parents' wishes and stuff like that. And in my case, I was actually, I can verify that when I was a kid, I got whisked away to a church camp without my parents even knowing. Do you think that this is a mistake on their part, or maybe you shouldn't answer this, but I question whether or not this is a mistake or if this is just another plausible deniability chain that we've seen religions do before. I imagine you can't really talk about that.
Well, yeah, I don't have any facts yet, and we're certainly not involved in this directly, you know, only helping the folks find out what happened and deal with it. But I think that the only thing we can do is take this as an opportunity to help them out and get a hand slap and let them know that this is not going to be okay if it happens again, and make them kind of feel bad that it did happen so that they double their efforts and make sure that this is passive.
So you've,
you know, beyond that, it's only speculation.
So you've asked for volunteers to help you distribute the books. How do you ensure your volunteers won't make the same mistakes?
Well, you know, we can't promise that won't happen, but I can certainly tell you that though we under strict instructions from us, and our intention will be to follow the rules. I trust the volunteers that I personally know that are helping, and those that we don't know well enough yet will be working on a team with people we do know. So that's the best we can do. We certainly should expect that to have our efforts scrutinized, so I'll remind them of that as well. And, you know, we'll see what happens, but I expect it to go pretty smoothly.
So, David, you're slated to go in front of the Orange County School Board this week, I believe, to advocate for a ban on all outside groups. Help make sure the school doesn't engage in the viewpoint discrimination. What do you expect from that kind of meeting? And what are you hoping for from that meeting?
Well, it is a pre-agenda meeting. It's not one where we can, you know, all come and wear the same colored shirts and you know, get up in arms about this. So it's just going to be, I think, myself speaking against this. I don't know who else might be speaking for this. I don't know if it's even coming up because it's not an agenda item. It was a special order speaker request. But you're right, we definitely don't want any proselytizing in schools, and it's our purpose to demonstrate that all the resources that are being put towards this is just bad policy and the disruption that can be caused by this. According to my understanding, and FFRF is in agreement that they can do this the right way by excluding groups and have us all protected under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment by having none of us there or all of us there, and we would prefer none of us. And we're going to make that clear, and you know, along the way, if we've got to you know, do the distribution to make it clear that they don't want this to happen, then we're going to do it, even though we'd rather not.
Yeah, I'd be curious, when they came to you, when they approved the first distribution of atheist materials in the school, did they give you an explicit list of do's and do nots, or... I guess I'm looking at this in terms of, is there a lot of leeway in the current protocols for adults on campus that these Christian groups can take advantage of?
No, it appears that the school board is serious about doing this right. I guess the first time they did it, it may not have gone as well as they thought, you know, based on what we heard about from Wakaiva. But I think that we're expecting that it should be something that you know, continues and is done properly with no adults. I'm not sure if I've answered your question well enough, Mike.
I think it makes sense. So if we could follow up on this, if people want to follow this online, where could they find Central Florida Free Thought Community, and where can they find updates on the literature distribution?
Sure. If you've got listeners that are down here in Central Florida, we definitely want them to be in touch with us, and they can reach us through there's a few emails, but I'll give you the one for our volunteer coordinators who are putting together the teams. That's CFL Free Thought for Central Florida Free Thought, CFLFreeThought@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we'll get that, whoever tries to get in touch. But then the Facebook page is something we just created last week, and we've timelined the entire order of events as well as the media, and that can be found at facebook.com/CFL Free Thought. And we have a website, but we're directing folks to Facebook since it's so flexible. And even if you don't participate in Facebook, you can click the closed window and get rid of the thing asking you to sign up, and you can still see what's going on and all the news media and everything there. So CFL Free Thought is our acronym, and it's at facebook.com.
Well, it sounds like you were dropped into the deep end of the pool right away, so welcome to it.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad we were able to respond. So it's going really well. I feel like the distribution will go off without a hitch, and we'll report back and maybe do some press about how this went down so that the movement can learn from it.
I would really look forward to that. David Williamson is the director of Central Florida Free Thought Community, an organization dedicated to secular activism and state church separation. They're working to get Bibles out of the schools after an organization called World Changers of Florida decided to distribute Bibles there, and in response, they are distributing their own literature. Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
You too. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, snake handling.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And I said that we were going to talk about snake handling, but Becky took exception to that because it's not actually a snake, right?
It's snake bites.
Yeah.
And Well, not bites from a snake.
So a man was arrested for biting snake-possessed son to death. 53-year-old Katsumi Nagaya of Okazaki City, Japan, seriously injured his son by headbutting him and biting him after the 23-year-old began writhing around, acting violently, and claiming to be a serpent. Takuya was taken to hospital but succumbed to his injuries. The elder Nagaya told police he attacked his son in order to remove the snake that was haunting him. Reports say that the father's mental health will likely be examined. I guess that's a bit too late to examine the son's mental health.
They didn't answer the question. Did they get the snake out of him?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that works. I mean, if in the event that we have another snake haunting,
right.
I want to know if headbutting and biting works.
I suppose you fight fire with fire. Snakes bite and headbutt you, so
this
you
is
should
like,
bite and headbutt them
snakes
back.
Snakes aren't really known for their headbutting.
This is like your parents discovering that you smoke and making you smoke a whole carton at once, I suppose.
I guess, yeah. Except in this case, it's him attacking him like a zombie.
That's
with
true.
Headbutting.
Oh, let's not start that again. Please. No more. No more.
That's how these things start.
Yeah, no. That no more face eating.
So here's the thing. I mean, if you're looking at someone being possessed by a demon, if someone thinks that they are possessed by a demon, the correct response would not be to indulge their fantasy that they are in fact possessed by a demon, and then certainly not to try and exorcise that demon through fatally biting them.
That's true. That's true.
Unless the delusion is a two-way street in this case, obviously you're not going to bite and headbutt somebody in this fashion unless you believe in the snake haunting as well.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that if you think you're possessed by a demon, the proper response is a mental health checkout, is a trip to the hospital or a trip to the psychiatrist. That is a weird part of this, is that there's this, I'm having trouble interfacing with this. There's this kid,
it's an intergenerational delusion.
Yeah, you walk home from your job, you're walking the door, and you're like, I'm gonna make dinner or whatever, and your son's writhing around the floor pretending to be a snake, and you're like, hey, great, I'll join in, and I'll attack him, because, to get him to stop, or...
This is the part that kind of scares me here, is that he died from bites. I can bite somebody a bunch and not really seriously injure them. Think about how badly he had to wound him.
Actually, human bites can be pretty infectious.
They can be, yeah. But I don't think it looked like he died of infection. It looks like he died of his injuries.
Okay.
I mean, that's a lot of biting.
I suppose.
That's you know, breaking the skin, that's him bleeding, that's really... awful.
Yeah.
I mean, that is zombie attack.
I don't know that I can assume that from the article, but human bites are well known to be very, you know, bad, almost like Komodo dragon bites in that way.
And to be fair, it may have been from head injury.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
From the headbutt or from him hitting him in the head?
Probably hitting in the head, headbutting to death. I mean, concussions are not good.
No.
Yeah.
Human skull is a very, very hard thing.
I don't know where to go with this one. This is weird.
I just kind of stand back with my jaw hanging.
Yeah. This is where we all stand back and go,
this is the world we live in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's times like this that I just look at humanity and go, maybe I'm adopted. I was shot from another planet. This isn't my species.
Well, one of the things that's really important here is that, you know, we can have people that have beliefs, and sometimes they can be completely benign. They're without sort of rational evidence to back them. There's sometimes when you have these beliefs, they're masking these serious mental illnesses like this.
That's true. And that's why I said when you think you're possessed by a demon, the right thing to do is to seek professional help. So we have a new horse, and the horse you rode in on, another talk about blasphemy, and this is a weird one. This is actually a pretty high-level one. Pakistan's envoy to the U.S. faces blasphemy accusation. A petition accusing Pakistan's ambassador to the United States of committing blasphemy has been filed with the country's Supreme Court. Police were directed on Thursday to investigate allegations against Sherry Rimmon, who is already facing death threats from militants after calling for reforms of the country's anti-blasphemy law, according to court documents. The allegations against Rimmon revolve around comments she made on Pakistani television in August in 2010, where they brought 31-year-old businessman Muhammad Farim Gill, who felt Rimmon's comments were derogatory to the Prophet Muhammad and, being a Muslim, it was his responsibility to do something about it. Before becoming a diplomatic envoy, Rimmon was the founding chairperson of a nonpartisan public policy think tank committed to strengthening of democracy, governance, and independent national security project in Pakistan, according to the website of Pakistan's embassy in the United States.
The thing that you say here, Sam, is that, you know, blasphemy is really just censorship laws with a religious flavor. This is seriously someone who says, you know, I don't like this person talking about how we should weaken our blasphemy laws, so therefore I'm going to accuse yourself of blasphemy.
This is another one of these cases where blasphemy laws not only bring out the crazy people, it's, I think it's even worse than a general secular law on censorship, which is that it has this visceral attachment to it that a regular secular censorship law wouldn't, which is that this person's going against God, this person's going against God. It's not just insulting this idea, it's also insulting me personally because it's tied to this identity. So you get these visceral, violent reactions, not just from militants, but all sorts of people who wouldn't otherwise get that angry about this.
I've said a lot that blasphemy laws are just censorship laws with a religious flavor. And in this case, there's no clear indicator. This is somebody talking about blasphemy laws and why they're bad, then being accused of blasphemy for talking about that. So talking about censorship is censored. Talking about a D-notice garners you another D-notice.
Well, that's what it is when censorship is your religion, then saying that censorship is bad is blasphemy.
And did you see what I did there?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
It's the
yeah, I know. It's this is just one of those things. This is why we need to talk about blasphemy. This is why we need to keep this up. I know, you know, the Innocence of Muslims video is now long in past. It did not cause the terrorism in Benghazi, but what it showed us here at Ask an Atheist is just how endemic blasphemy laws are. And here we go. Somebody talking about blasphemy laws and how they might be holding a country back and how they might be better served by getting rid of those is then charged with blasphemy. This is how do we have progress in this situation?
It's hard to, because the way you have progress is by having conversations. And if you're not allowed to have conversations, guess what? You can't make a lot of progress.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly not here at Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we've got a new email, one that I think Becky has been chomping at the bit a little bit to do for a while now.
Sure.
And it's about a guy whose name I have trouble pronouncing.
That would be Maimonides.
Maimonides. All right. This is Sammy from the USA. I am agnostic, but something prevents me from becoming an official atheist, and that is the fact that my Rambam, the greatest philosopher ever, whose influence has spanned centuries and cultures, believed in God. I am sure he was aware of his atheistic theories, and still he believed. Am I to be smarter than the smartest? I would appreciate some clarity. Thanks.
Hi, Sammy. As someone who grew up in a pluralistic Jewish environment, reading lots of Maimonides and Rambam, I can succinctly say that Maimonides being called the greatest philosopher ever is slightly biased, perhaps. Maimonides certainly was a philosopher, based in a religious tradition, had some really great ideas, but in terms of him being smarter than all of the smartest, or him being the smartest, I would direct you to Maimonides' treatise on hemorrhoids, for instance, where he says that hemorrhoids are caused by an excess of black bile. Black bile being one of the four humors.
Right. So, give us some background about he who apparently cannot be named.
By Maimonides, who is also called Rambam.
Yeah.
A little bit easier for Sam to say, I guess.
A little bit.
He was a philosopher, a commentator on taking the Torah and the Talmud, and had some really great things to say, and was pretty formative in terms of rabbinical practice of Judaism. You know, has lots of things like a hierarchy of good deeds. Is it better to give with the person, with the recipient, knowing that you are in fact giving them, or is it better to give anonymously? Stuff like that. You know, definitely had a dedication to sort of ethics and whatnot, and was very informative in bringing a lot of Jewish thought and in terms of European, you know, thought forward in terms of ethics.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is even if he was the smartest man in his time, he's also limited by the time that he was born in.
Yeah.
You could take the smartest and most talented surgeon of the 17th century, and he wouldn't be allowed to practice medicine today.
Because
there is so much that we have learned between now and then that is going to change something and actually make a lot of the smartest person's ideas irrelevant. For instance, Sir Isaac Newton, who we're all going to agree is one of the smartest men who ever lived, he believed in alchemy.
Yeah.
He believed in a lot of pseudoscientific things, and I think that if Isaac Newton lived today, he would have actually shorn and thrown off some of these other ideas that he had.
Quite possibly.
Who knows if the same could have been said of Maimonides?
We can't know until we invent that time machine, until we have that TARDIS. So I would even go you one further, is that a surgeon from back in the day, and this is a bit of a historical thing, wouldn't be able to operate, nor would they be able to cut hair, because back in the day, that was the same job.
Nor would they necessarily know what your body parts were once they cut you open and what they all did.
They weren't allowed to.
And that's the thing. I guess, and it gets back to that point about Sir Isaac Newton. The smartest man in the world can be wrong. really wrong.
Absolutely.
Even if somebody's, I mean, this is something we've found with a lot of people that we respect, is that sometimes there's someone that we think is one of the smartest, most eloquent speakers on a certain topic, but when they start talking about something else, like, I'm a big fan of Roger Ebert as a film critic.
Yes.
But I think he's a lot less informed when it comes to video games. And yeah. He's written things that have made me go, Roger Ebert, what are you thinking?
We've gone on at length together about how Roger Ebert just doesn't get the video game concept.
But it doesn't mean that he's not smart. It just means he's a smart guy who's wrong on certain things. And I think Maimonides is wrong about God.
Yeah.
And, you know, what this speaks to, Sammy, is falling into a logical fallacy called argument from authority. You're an agnostic, and if Maimonides is the only thing that's preventing you from saying, yeah, I'm an atheist, I really don't believe in God, and I don't live my life with God, and the only thing that's preventing you is the fact that Maimonides believed in God, you're saying that Maimonides being an important guy in history is more important than me reasoning through whether God is likely to exist or not.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who believe in God and things that I don't believe in and things that I actually think are harmful to society that I really respect. I mean, again, we say it all the time, people better than their religions. And there's a lot of people out there who do science, who do research. There's that one Catholic guy who did,
Ken Miller.
Yeah. Great guy to talk about.
Good scientist, too.
A great scientist, a very good speaking about evolution, also a Catholic. So, you know what? It's possible to take the good and leave the bad. Something about facts of life there, I think?
I think so.
Okay, right.
Everyone's a mix of good and bad.
Everyone, yeah. You don't even have to, just because you've decided to call yourself an atheist, doesn't mean you necessarily have to believe everything that Christopher Hitchens says, doesn't mean you have to clearly don't have to believe everything that we say, because, you know, what are we experts on?
Batman.
Well, no, you're an expert on Batman. So, last week, do we talk about Megan Fox again? I mean, do we follow that up?
I guess yes, we have to.
Please. Megan Fox believes in lots of weird things. Megan Fox is not the smartest of the smartest.
No. No.
Megan Fox believes in so many bad things that she makes Dan Aykroyd look like Carl Sagan.
Yeah. Wow. You were saving that one, weren't you? So Casey from New Mexico cleared up the mystery of the Bell Witch, one of the mythical creatures that the actress Megan Fox believes in. The Bell Witch you mentioned on the show is part of Tennessee folklore. The legend says the witch haunted and ultimately killed a farmer named John Bell. The legend is an inspiration for the Blair Witch Project and the basis of the movie An American Haunting. So we were actually, you know, you thought it was Blair Witch Project, so you were right on that.
Well, I'm sure there's a version of that witch in pretty much every part of New England and the East Coast. So.
Yeah, well, a Facebook commenter Fenchurch suggested that maybe Michael Bay should actually just get down to it and direct the Bell Witch Project.
I believe she's from the website.
Yes.
So, if Michael Bay directs it, does it mean that the witch is going to be some kind of racist stereotype? Then?
Yeah.
That's how he rolls. Michael Bay makes you feel really uncomfortable watching his movies. Look, a racist robot.
I think you're right, and I don't want to examine that concept any further.
Let's not encourage Michael Bay to do
things. Yeah, no. So, two listeners, both named David, encourage us to check out the Skeptoid and Monster Talk podcasts, which have episodes dedicated to the Bell Witch. Finally, Nathan from Tennessee let us know that the Bell Witch really actually is quite famous in this part of Tennessee. He should know he went to high school with someone related to the Bell family. So that's
survivors
a fun story.
Of witch-related attacks.
Yeah. Oh man. So let's see here. Did we talk about the leprechaun and the Elvis painting?
We did. We still have yet to find a black velvet painting of leprechaun shaking hands with Jesus. So.
Leprechaun's kind of random, isn't it?
Yeah.
I did see a picture on the internet once of it looked like. Darwin getting into a fist fight with Jesus.
Yeah.
But at first I thought it was mostly just Harvey Pekar fighting Kenny Loggins.
So we do have Waco from Montana, who said, hey, I just wanted to say I love the show and all the Dune references. Dune was, is, and always will be my favorite book ever. I was so obsessed with it as a kid, but I think I've grown past my weirdness with it. Nah, I still love it deeply, and it's good to hear that others do too. Dune is my Tolkien. It really is.
And Dune happens to be science fiction, and you as an atheist have read science fiction. Do you think that Dune helps you be less smug, Sam?
No. It gives me a sense of superiority over Tolkien fans.
Oh, okay. I'm just gonna bottle that up and let it just turn into rage over time. I want it to become irrational, and I want it just to explode in a completely unrelated conversation. What do you mean? No, I don't know. Dune's okay. I've read the first book, and I saw the David Lynch movie, but...
Well, the David Lynch movie is great for all the wrong reasons. It really is.
We're talking about Sting wearing the little V
thing? Sting wearing the plastic V, being orbited by a magical floating fat man.
That's like a really messed up version of that scene from Mary Poppins with the flying guy.
Yeah.
What is the name of that character?
Uncle Albert.
Uncle Albert, yeah. That's a really disturbing, except he looks like a bloated, disturbed L. Ron Hubbard.
Okay, I haven't seen Mary Poppins in a very long time.
I have.
I know. Actually, is Mary Poppins your Dune? Is that how that works?
Mary Poppins might be my Dune, yes.
Yeah. Have you read the book or just the movie?
I have read some of the chapters of some of the books. There are several books from Mary Poppins, and each chapter is a little vignette about her adventures with the kids.
I can talk about Dune a lot, but the thing about Dune is people position it as a young adult novel. Kids generally tend to read it, but I go back and read it, I think, roughly every 18 months, at the very least. And, you know, the clear oil story there is nice, but it's a very religious universe. It is an incredibly religious universe. Everybody, you know, there's the interplay of four different distinct religions that are all pastiches of Earth religions, and none of them are good. I mean, I don't think Frank Herbert intended it, but I think there's a really, you know, it shows you what religion can do.
Well, a writer is going to put his own views into something, whether they realize they're doing it or not, even if they're doing it unintentionally. I find it fascinating that none of the major Earth religions survived into the Dune future without major changes, and to the point that they're completely different religions with only a thematic change, you know, in their name.
Well, even on Earth, over the course of 2,000 years, none of the major religions survived. I mean, modern Judaism is extremely different from the ancient Hebrews.
One would say that Christianity has really changed in the 2,000 years of its existence. And I will end with, Dune is a really good example of why I think superheroes don't make sense. And that's all the time we've got. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Olvey. With me today was Mike Gillis and Rebecca Friedman. Thank you very much, David Williamson. As usual, our music is by Chris Coleman. Post-show is at the Ale House at 19th and Mildred at 5 p.m. Join us Wednesday, 4 p.m. for the show.
Yes, join us.
See you next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood Tacoma on 1180 AM.